Arc Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Every listener matters, and we're here because of listeners like you. Thank you for all your support.
Hi, I'm Andre Goulet. You're listening to Harbinger Showcase. Harbinger Showcase is a weekly podcast syndicated to community and campus radio, including CITR, CJSR, and Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Victoria's CFUV, CHLY in Nanaimo, CIVL in Abbotsford, CJSR in Edmonton, CKUW and CJUM in Winnipeg, at Met Radio in Toronto, at Radio Laurier in Waterloo, at CFMU in Hamilton, at CJM in Windsor, at Montreal CKUT, at Local FM in St. John, New Brunswick, and at CJBU in Sydney, Nova Scotia. I'm featuring highlights from the country's favorite progressive podcast community. Since launching in 2020, the Harbinger Media Network has become Canada's number one listener-supported nonprofit podcast network, featuring 83 shows exploring politics, society, and culture from a progressive perspective. Find out more about the community, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and support us at harbingermedianetwork.com. On this episode, we're proud to present a live recording from this summer's Sony Porillopapalo Music Festival live broadcast in collaboration with CKUT 90.3 FM and held at Casa del Popolo in Montreal. But first, this September, the CEOs of BlackRock, Blackstone, and others from the Global 1% are coming to Toronto at the invitation of Prime Minister Mark Carney. It's billed as an investment summit the federal government's hosting, but what they're actually hosting is a privatization summit looking to privatize airports, water systems, pipelines, toll roads, ports, AI data centers, housing, and mineral deposits from stolen indigenous lands. But while CEOs and foreign investors are gathering at a luxury hotel downtown to buy up what remains of our shared public infrastructure, others are planning the fight back at the Many Versus the Money Counter Summit happening at OCAD University. Convened by the Council of Canadians, Eighth Fire Rising, and World Beyond War, the Counter Summit will open on Saturday, September 12th, featuring keynote speakers journalist Naomi Klein and U.S. scholar and activist Kianga Yamada Taylor, and musical guest folk singer Carsey Blanton at 5 p.m. Then on Sunday, September 13th, the Counter Summit continues with an all-day teach-in, bringing together organizers, researchers, and frontline activists from movements including labor, indigenous, tenants' rights, climate, anti-war, migrant rights, Palestine solidarity, and others. Panels will look at the role these corporate elites play in the worsening crises working-class people face and how the many can organize to defeat the money. For more information, visit manyversusmoneysummit.ca. This is a multi-day movement-building event not to be missed. Space is limited. Register now at manyversusmoneysummit.ca. And in this episode, join us for conversations with Maisonneuve magazine editor-in-chief and New Feeling Music Journalism Co-op co-founder Rosie Long-Dechter, the Council of Canadians Nick Barryshaw, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives John Milton, Alberta Advantage correspondent Liam Devitt, independent journalist Rachel Gilmore, and Tech Won't Save Us host Paris Marks. Now, here's the show. We are on the air at the Casa del Popolo backyard. I'm here with Nelson Graves.
Hey.
And Jack Soler.
Hi, how's it going?
We have John Milton, the Montreal correspondent or researcher or journalist writer, joining us as well. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi.
And Nick Barryshaw with the Council of Canadians also joining us. So thanks a lot for joining, guys. It's a collaboration with Sony Porillopapalo where we were just wanting to bring in some of the journalism spaces that are connected with unrig.ca, some of the podcast hosts that are connected with harbingermedianetwork.com, some of the advocacy groups that are also part of just like the progressive work that's done in Canadian journalism these days. So later listeners can tune in to hear Rachel Gilmore, Liam Devitt from Alberta Advantage Podcast, and Paris Marks, host of Tech Won't Save Us. But I'm excited to have you guys on to just kind of yap and gab about some of the work that you guys do. And Rosie, can you just quickly tell us, for listeners who don't know, what's Maisonneuve magazine? And why are you excited about the new issue that you guys are preparing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Andre. We are a Montreal-based quarterly magazine, so we print four times a year. We cover arts, ideas, culture, politics. We mix literary pieces with more journalistic pieces. And this summer, we are printing our 100th issue, which is really exciting. So that's been a big undertaking. It is a themed issue, themed around it's called the public issue. And we're looking at really the relationship between government policies and the people whose lives are shaped by them. So we have two pieces looking directly at austerity budgets in Canada, looking at the cuts to the arts funding in Nova Scotia that happened this year, as well as cuts to healthcare for refugees at the federal level. And then we also have some more personal first-person pieces talking about navigating the healthcare system with reproductive pain. Another piece talking about the burnout crisis facing childcare workers in Canada. So covering a lot of issues. It's jam-packed. It's stacked. We've got fiction, poetry, and we'll be doing a launch event for it July 21st at Bar Milton Park Co-op. Which you're hearing for the first time. I'm just announcing that. No one knows that.
Bar Milton Park Co-op is so great because it's a co-op and we love that. Mm-hmm. But also they've hosted Harbinger live shows. They're hosting a Briar Patch magazine show in August.
Yeah.
So this is two publications that are part of the Unrigged community. Mm-hmm. And I want to flag for listeners that we don't often order physical copies of magazines anymore. I'm a Maisonneuve subscriber, full disclosure. But the one-year subscription, $25, you're thinking, oh, that's a lot for a quarterly? Not really. That's not bad. But two-year subscription, $37.
It's a great deal.
For eight magazines.
In my opinion, it's a great deal.
It's a really good... three-year subscription for $45. Anyways.
It's a great birthday present, Christmas present, you know?
You're giving it away, practically. And it's a really solid magazine.
Thank you.
So I'm so happy that you guys are celebrating your 100th issue. It's really wonderful. And that sounds like a good issue. So thank you, Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
Over to John. Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives is a research org, but you guys also publish bimonthly.
Yeah, that's right. So we are first and foremost a research institute. We do a variety of long-form research into political and economic issues across Canada, basically, ranging from climate policy to labor legislation to union density to industrial policy to the whole sort of gamut of policy issues in Canadian politics. We work pretty directly with social movements, producing the research that we produce. And we produce a number of regular publications, including a quarterly magazine called The Monitor, that each issue has a theme. We have an issue that is about to come out. All the articles are going to be online next week on July 1st. The theme of this issue is the shifting world order. So it's sort of Canada's place in the world, the sort of decline of the American empire, growth of American fascism worldwide, and all of these types of things covered in the issue, global climate policy, all these things. And in addition to that quarterly magazine, we also run basically a daily news and analysis website. And so I am the lead editor of the news and analysis website and the co-editor of the print magazine. So quarterly magazine with themes, as well as just sort of basically daily news and analysis on the website that we run.
And I feel like CCPA gets slept on, but the work is so incredible. So I'm really happy just that we can have it, talk about it on CKHC and talk about the work you do. I'm also a subscriber to The Monitor, full disclosure. Nick, I'm also a dollar a year member of the Council of Canadians. That's right, a dollar a year to become a member. Tell us about the Council.
The Council is a membership-based grassroots organization. We're national. We have chapters across Canada. We have about 40 of them. We have donors, about 10,000 donors, monthly donors, and that's really where we get our support. We're 90% member-funded, and that gives us the political independence that we need to kind of to fight the corporate agenda. That was really the raison d'être of the organization from its founding in 1985, kind of in the crucible of the free trade fights that went on in the late 80s and going into the 90s. You know, we're kind of still dealing with the world that those struggles kind of produced, right, where we're just so bound kind of hand and foot to this declining, decrepit, and increasingly violent and authoritarian U.S. empire. and we're trying to find a way out.
So was the council actually kind of founded at that anti-globalization, better world is possible, kind of early 90s period? Because Maud Barlow, famously one of the co-founders.
Yeah. So Maud Barlow definitely was like the figurehead of the council for many, many years, and was also a leading kind of critic and opponent of these free trade deals. And so the council kind of emerged out of the most progressive kind of tendencies of Canadian nationalism. But I think one of the things that I've really appreciated in the time that I've been with the council since 2021 is how the membership and the orientation of the organization is very internationalist. There's a real concern for Indigenous rights and a consciousness around that. And so it's not kind of like blind to the injustices that kind of are inherent in the founding of Canada as a state. And so all of our organization and our chapters, everyone really takes that really seriously. So it's evolved with the times, and I think that's really fundamental.
And for the CCPA and for the council and for Maisonneuve magazine, they're nonpartisan, which is good in a sense because it means that you're not burdened with like the whims of the political moments for the NDP. But it also helps to energize sometimes in some eras how our Social Democratic Party in Canada applies its values or puts forward policies. So I really, really appreciate what the council does, what CCPA does, and I think how the legacy of both organizations helps to drive some of the journalism that we see with like Maisonneuve, which has also like been around for 20 years.
Yeah, 25 almost.
25 almost. Mm-hmm. So actually, wow, three legacy institutions. So let's open up the floor a bit, because I'd love to hear you guys talk with each other. I know the council had a conference in May that I attended, a civic summit to kind of counter the AI hype moments. But we don't want to talk about AI just because it's like a bummer. B, like everyone's talking about it all the time. And you guys had something I thought a lot more interesting to get into. Look, I'm a proud Liberal Party voter. I voted for Mark Carney. I would do it again. I'm one of the 48% of Canadians who would do it again right now. Put a ballot in front of me. I'll vote for him. Okay. But you were telling me in the bar earlier, that's like not the play. What are you talking about, you guys?
Yeah. I think the clearest explanation of what's going on has come from Goldie Hyder, who is the CEO of this organization called the Business Council of Canada, which is basically this corporate lobby, the kind of corporate lobby group to rule them all, you know, kind of like the ring from Lord of the Rings. They represent the CEOs of 170 largest corporations in Canada. And Hyder was saying, you know, Mark Carney's dilemma, the Prime Minister's dilemma, is that he needs to keep people riled up enough about Donald Trump's threats so that he can move forward on his domestic agenda, you know, of austerity, of militarism, of attacking what's left of our public health care system, of slashing environmental regulations, running roughshod over Indigenous rights, all this stuff. So he needs to keep people upset and focused on Donald Trump enough, but not so much as to get in the way of a renegotiation of this trade deal, which is what the corporate elite want. And even they're talking about Fortress North America now, and that's coming out. And so there's some really deep contradictions here between the Mark Carney that people heard and were inspired by and had invested a lot of their hopes in, you know, for that 48% of Canadians who feel that way, and the Mark Carney that we got, you know, who is, you know, they kind of voted for a banker with a social conscience, and they got a banker.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's coming to light more and more. And I think, you know, that 48% is declining, and I think it's going to continue as these contradictions and just, I mean, it's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of situation where, like, what was promised and what you're actually getting is so radically divergent that I think, you know, it can't hold up for long. Anyways, that's what we're hoping. That's what we're working towards.
If we make noise about it, absolutely. I think, you know. Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, even Stephen Gilbo, who, you know, longtime environmentalist, former environment minister under Justin Trudeau, said it very explicitly in an interview just, like, last week, I want to say, who, by the way, for those who aren't aware, he resigned from his position because of this massive swing to the right that the Liberal Party under Carney has taken. Gilbo sort of represented the left flank of the Liberal Party. And he said in an interview, he said, you know, we ran as like a center-left party, as a progressive party, and we're governing as a right-wing party, right? Mm-hmm. It's a complete bait and switch in the way that this government has acted in the time since they took power. The thing that they promised, like you said, is completely radically different from what they're actually delivering on. And, you know, I mean, people who are paying attention in the last election did know that this was coming, right?
Well, paid attention to the Liberal Party for the history of Canadian existence.
Exactly, right? Like, I mean, this is not exactly, despite what Gilbo says, this is not exactly the first time that the Liberal Party runs to the left and governs on the right. But in this last election, we were really, you know, it was a race between Stephen Harper's two favorite children, right? And, you know, that's what we got with the government that's here now.
Stéphane Guilbeault getting out of the spotlight of politics has been good for him, though. He's trimming his beard. He's dressing better. I think he's exercising. So that is good. It's nice to see people leave the cabinet. Rosie, what do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, with Maisonneuve, this is part of the reason we've themed our 100th issue around the public sphere, because we feel that there is kind of an attack happening on the public sector in Canada, you know, on this also kind of like a democratic space where we have like a healthy, independent left-wing media. Like, it's important to advocate for that as well. Yeah. And I think that there's also... I liked, actually, I'm going to point out Sierra Club's recent newsletter where they mentioned that this kind of idea of like flooding the zone. Mm-hmm. And there's so much, Carney is doing so much that it's hard to keep track of all the different cuts and all the different proposals and the pipeline drama and everything going on. And so one piece we have in our 100th issue is just trying to highlight like one really small element of these cuts that might get missed, which is cuts to healthcare for refugees. And so we have a deep dive on that, talking to doctors who are saying, you know, basically surcharges have been added to medications for refugees, which were previously federally covered. And these surcharges are going to add up. They're going to put people who are already in precarious positions into further precarity. They're going to lose their housing. You know, this is, doctors are sounding the alarm about this. And from the government's perspective, this is a modest cut. This is something that is, you know, just the price of doing business in Canada, where we need to stop having sort of lavish lifestyles that are the welfare state, you know? Mm. So that's kind of one way we're looking at this and just trying to highlight one small piece of this bigger puzzle.
And I think the thing to remember about this, about all this also, is that we're not just talking about cuts and austerity, right? Because, like, yes, we are seeing the social state, the welfare state, being gutted, privatized, sold to the private sector that's going to chop it to pieces and destroy it and replace, you know, your tax agent with an AI chatbot or whatever the hell, right? But we are also seeing a concurrent massive investment in the military-industrial complex,
yeah, absolutely.
Right? To see a gigantic and unprecedented, probably since the Second World War, increase in military spending, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's worth remembering here that that money is going to U.S. corporations. Mm-hmm. That money is going to the U.S. military-industrial complex, which is deeply integrated with the Canadian one, right? Yeah. And so we don't even have this excuse that, like, oh, you know, we don't have the money, we need to reduce our expenses, everybody's tightening their belt. Yeah. We are literally just taking money out of refugees' healthcare plans and giving it to U.S. arms manufacturers, right, so that they can build bombs that they're going to
send. Well, it's for Canadian sovereignty.
That's right.
Obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, very cynical, but guys, what if, so it's sort of grim, but also as we know, the chaos moment down south really helps to propel and bolster the sales of Mr. Carney. I think people also just like having an uncle in charge, where it's like, you know what, things are really stressful.
They love a cringe dad.
Centrist dad.
Yeah. Centrist cringe dad.
Politico called him that.
Yeah, like the Canadian psyche is like, oh, thank God.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Thank God.
So the Council of Canadians, though, is... I think really publicly kind of calling this out, CCPA 2, Maisonneuve, like you said in the magazine. But I'm wondering, what is the council cooking up in the coming months?
Yeah, I think, you know, we mentioned flooding the zone and the fact that the attacks are coming so from so many directions and with such, you know, speed and intensity that, like, we really felt like this is a moment where we need to put a lot of effort into federating our forces, working with other organizations, coordinating across different struggles and finding ways to do that. Definitely the AI summit was part of that. And one of the things that's grown out of that is like a kind of coordination of these different fights that are popping up. I mean, this is even independently of the council. I'm not going to take credit for everything that's happening, but you know, we're trying to like link together local organizers in different cities where there are these data center projects that are just being absolutely railroaded forward. And also we're organizing a conference coming up to kind of a counter conference, a many versus the money counter summit to this gathering that Carney has announced.
I'm going to go to our next panel. So we'll invite our next panelists on the air. Again, it's really great to be spending time at the Sony Pro Popolo Music Festival. I'm happy to have the opportunity to play with three new panelists. Liam Devitt from the Alberta Advantage podcast, their Eastern correspondent. Liam, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me on, Andre.
Paris Marks from the Tech
Eastern, you know, it goes further east than this, right?
Yeah,
this
well, technically my title is Lower Canada correspondent, but I'm told that in the province of Quebec, if I say that on the radio, bad things will happen.
So
I might have actually just done that.
That voice you heard, Paris Marks from Paris from the Tech Won't Save Us podcast from St. John's, visiting Montreal. Hi, Paris.
That's me. That's proper east, you know.
That's further east.
Yeah.
And north. And
Rich, north? I don't know if I'd go that far.
Is Newfoundland north of... Well, I don't know geography.
Like, relatively.
Well, like, yeah, Labrador is more north, you know.
Okay.
But
I heard it's the most eastern point in the world. Sorry, that's a reference to when I got screeched in. There was a drunk girl who was like, "We're in the most eastern point in the world." And it was an extremely funny
for
comment.
Listeners who are not aware, a screech-in is a particularly cultural tradition that we have in Newfoundland and Labrador, where you drink some gross whiskey, you kiss a fish, you say some fun sayings, and you become an honorary Newfoundlander, which Rachel is.
Allegedly.
Paris screeched in Rachel. No, yeah. I mean...
No, you know, a certified screech inner.
Yeah, Paris is not qualified.
Do you have to take a class for that?
Oh, 100%.
You're not ordained?
And Rachel has a certificate.
Yes, well, I do.
Yeah,
I do.
To prove
what does it.
It You should frame it and put it in your video background.
I think it's honorary Newfoundlander or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I should frame that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're here to talk about... many things, including Newfoundland. But I did want to begin with one
I
of
thought
our
the whole hour was just we're talking
Newfoundland,
about
Newfoundland. Talk.
Yeah.
I love Newfoundland.
Thank you.
I do too, but we have to begin with one of our favorite games.
Are you
which
gonna introduce me on
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, of course. And independent journalist Rachel Gilmore. But
unbelievable.
It's good to have you back.
So rude.
It's good to be here.
He just assumed everyone would know me from my voice.
Of course.
Because
yeah.
I never shut up.
You're very relatable.
Well, you are
everyone knows
you're
you.
Famous.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
We do
might
be
not have a Wikipedia page, but famous.
Yeah. Paris has a Wikipedia page, and I do not. So, for the record, if anyone's famous here, it is
no.
Not me.
Wow. Any Wikipedia editors listening?
I keep saying
I actually am that.
Oh
my god.
Okay. So. You need to make Rachel a Wikipedia page so she can stop holding it over me.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why you need to not do it.
You can compete for my editing skills.
Oh, you're gonna have fun with this, eh?
Yeah.
My page is gonna need an update soon.
I
have a new book coming out. My page is gonna need an update. Yeah.
Oh. We're gonna talk about Paris's new book later, but we do have to begin with one of our favorite games. We always play this when we come together and hang out for a picnic, for karaoke, whatever.
Okay.
We love to play friend, foe, or francophone. Let's begin. Liam. Liam.
Am I allowed to play this?
Liam.
Yeah.
Celine Dion.
Well, two of the things are true. Friend and francophone.
Perfect.
Your personal friends with Celine Dion?
Well, I think she's a friend to all.
Yes, she is.
So
I would agree.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Paris Marks. Gilles Duceppe.
I don't know if a Newfoundlander can take this one.
You won't even speak the truth.
You're about to get canceled no matter what. This is mean,
I feel bad.
Well, we're definitely going francophone. I think, do we add friend as well? Or
sure.
He's become super racist, right? So maybe he's faux now.
Jim?
Isn't he?
Is
he?
Well, maybe
I'm
less
honestly,
than some.
I haven't caught up with him since he was in Parliament.
How about?
I feel like there was a moment. We've talked about this.
Since he was a young Marxist, let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Since you carry around a Bloc Québécois water bottle.
Oh, my God.
Young Marxist sounds like a rap name.
But there was a moment where, like, you know, all the other federal leaders really sucked, and, like, Gilles Duceppe was actually, like, interesting.
Well, yeah. Like, was it maybe the 2008 election?
I think.
When, like, everyone was kind of floundering and Gilles Duceppe was, like, actually talking about, like, industrial collapse in the forestry industry and all this kind of stuff. But the funny thing is now
okay,
is that
I'll admit, I didn't pay attention to that specific
part. Well,
yeah.
Part, the thing is, Paris, I'm a freak.
Yeah.
But, like, the funny thing with Gilles Duceppe is that his son is now, like, an MP. And I read, like, I think it was a Le Devoir profile about it. And Gilles Duceppe keeps calling his now son, Alexis Brunel-Duceppe, like, twice a day to offer, like, unsolicited political advice.
Oh, really?
And, like, I kind of, like, I wish to kind of have that kind of overbearing father energy in some ways. But then I understand that would be also terrible.
Give it like 40 years. You'll get there.
Oh, yeah. Time.
Time flies.
Yeah.
Rachel, friend, foe, or francophone? Cirque du Soleil.
Foe.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding. How much are tickets?
To go? Like $800?
Yeah, then foe.
Okay.
It's called Bread and Roses for a reason. If you can't afford the roses, come on.
They used to be affordable, right?
Good
at
point.
One time.
Well, we saw, when I was a child, we saw Cirque du Soleil, I think. It was one either that or like a ripoff on tour, and my little sister was so young, and she just screamed out, "Be careful, bendy lady!" in the middle of, anyway, that's all I can think of when I think of that. So, you traumatized my young sibling.
Wow.
So, personal foe. How about that?
Personal foe.
Yeah.
We can come back to this game later. If any names pop into your head, we'll play again, but thank you. That was a round of...
Oh, you
friend.
Don't have to do one?
Oh, no. I think we need an Andre one. Andre, friend, foe, francophone, Paul Saint-Pierre Plamondon.
He's going to come down as a foe to me because he's been a real douche.
Yeah.
He's been a real loser. So that's an absolute foe. It's a bit of a shame. You might wish the Parti Québécois leader was not a complete dork, but he's a loser. Sorry.
Damn.
That's kind of what you expect, though, isn't it? Okay.
And are you erasing his francophone identity because he went to McGill?
Whoa, he did. That's right.
Yeah, no, he went to McGill and English he went to Oxford.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
No,
does he even speak French?
Well, I don't know. I only read the Gazette. So
Canadian political life is full of contradictions. Quebecois political life too. Next segment. I was thinking about this before, and actually, I think this would be really interesting. So, because we're at a music festival, Sony Imperial Popolo, and I saw some music last night, and it's so wonderful to just go out to a show. Sony curated a really incredible festival with dozens of shows over 16 days, and it was making me think about, because I've never asked you guys this. Either what was your first concert you went to, or what was your most memorable? And for me, I have a most memorable, which I'll get to maybe last, but I don't remember my first, actually. So, Liam, first or most memorable?
Yeah.
It was way back, eh, Andre?
Yeah, it was way back.
Well, 1870.
1870.
Yeah, you saw a Stravinsky or something. You know? No, I think for me, in terms of the first most memorable, my dad and my stepmom are both musicians, so I couldn't even tell you what the first concert I went to was because it was just going to shows for forever. But the first concert that I went to that was a proper quote unquote rock concert that I paid for with my saved up allowance, like any good gay boy from Calgary, was Tegan and Sarah at Mac Hall.
Ooh. Of course.
Nice.
And it was a very important night for me. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Who was the opener? Was there one?
There were two openers. It was Two Attached, which was Vivek Shreya's band with her brother. And then it was Shura, who did that one song that was a hit once called "What's It Gonna Be."
Yeah,
it's a good song. Has a fun video, and she did a song with I'm sorry, Shura, if I misgendered you on community radio, with Talib Kweli as well. I think
canceled.
So, yeah.
When I saw Tegan and Sarah, Lights was the opener.
I've also seen Lights.
Band opened
I saw Lights at Wee Day.
I know.
I saw Lights in Edmonton earlier this year.
Is this how we are aging ourselves, when we saw Tegan? Yeah.
I saw them in the CTV green room.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, journalist.
So Paris only likes metal and pure pop.
Those
two things exclusively, I believe. So Paris, for you, what was your first? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. If we're thinking first big concert.
Sure.
This is embarrassing. Nickelback.
No, I think it turns around.
I was about to reassure you, and then you dropped the name. Yeah, that is really
bad.
Not many concerts came through Newfoundland. Let's be clear here.
Oh, that's such a good. Yeah. Nickelback went to Newfoundland. Eh?
Yeah.
You know what? Point for them.
You got to give them credit.
Yeah.
What about the most memorable? But you go to a lot of shows.
I do go to a lot of shows, but I would say most memorable for me was Lady Gaga 2010 at the Bell Center, Fame Monster Tour. It was incredible. And we were right up against the barricade, right in the front. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that the one where she broke her leg?
No, she did not break her leg there.
Oh.
Yep.
No, I think she did another show here.
Okay.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah. Back when concert tickets were not insanely expensive, you know?
Cirque du Soleil levels,
yeah.
Rachel, how about you? Do you remember your first?
Oh, do I ever. My first like proper like stadium concert, Hillary Duff.
Ooh,
that's a good one.
Yeah, my friend is going to see her.
Yeah. I went to Le Chateau. I bought a top, okay?
Bringing me back.
A cute top to wear with my, I want to say they were like capri jeans, but I'm not sure.